Welcome to Wynn Tucson, a new voice and a different point of view. Here, it's about issues, not politics. Treat her like a lady after she's given to you. Here's your host, Kathleen Wynn.
Welcome to 1030 The Voice, and this is Kathleen Wynn, and you're listening to Wynn Tucson. And I am so excited for my first guest, who I have worked in the trenches with, and that is Jan Edwards. And she is founder and president of Paving the Way Foundation, which empowers communities to disrupt child exploitation. And she's also the co-chair of the Central Florida Human Trafficking Task Force. That's quite a title. So, Jan, welcome to Wynn Tucson.
Kathleen! Hey.
So glad you're here.
Thanks for inviting me. Yeah.
So there is so much going on, and you are just a warrior, and we need more warriors to protect our children. And it seems each day we find out more and more of things that are broken in our country. And so you've been working with youth for over 8 years, and what has changed? What are kids dealing with now versus when you started?
Yeah, thanks for asking me that question, Kathleen. You know, it's so interesting because I've actually set up a meeting with our school board and our superintendent because of what we're seeing. So, you know, we've been doing this for 7 years. We've trained and educated over 34,000 young people. And when we first started, the level of online extortion, the level of exploitation, it was nowhere near what it's like today. And most kids had a kind of an idea of what, you know, some of the things that were happening on their social media platforms, but it really didn't heat up until during the pandemic. And, you know, we had some kids disclose. It was very rare. They were very appreciative of the knowledge and information, and they made some changes on their social media platforms. They, you know, put their location settings on, or they deleted people that they didn't know personally, or they put their platforms on private, all very important things. And we're now inside the school system here in Orange County. We're grateful for that. And we've been to several middle schools. And there's a question that we ask because we, you know, we start to talk about children's vulnerability, and we want them to get that they actually are vulnerable. They think they're not. We know they are. You know, their brains aren't fully developed, and the environment calls for something else. So, we have a question that we ask, Kathleen, when we talk about vulnerabilities, and I'm going to give you the full question, and then I'm going to give you what we're seeing. So,
okay.
The full question, it's a series of questions, right? So, you know, have you ever felt lonely or alone? Have you ever had a DM or a picture from strangers? So it's several questions, right? And so one of the
tell my listeners what a DMR picture is. I know you use.
So a direct message, you know, direct message or an inappropriate body part picture. I'm not going to say anything more than that.
Thank you.
Yeah, a DM. Absolutely. Yeah, it's amazing.
I just want adults to know, though, that children are receiving inappropriate pictures directly into their emails and directly into their messaging or directly
into their messaging. Every day, all day, being bombarded every day. In fact, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children received over 36 million cyber tips last year for child sexual abuse material. They get 99,000 reports a day.
Mm. Okay.
So for parents to think that this isn't happening, we're here to say, wake up. Anyway, so the question is this, back to the original question, right?
Yes.
So the question is, how many of you have experienced feeling either angry or upset at your parents, your guardians, your siblings, that you've thought, not that you've done it, but you've thought about running away? Okay, that's the whole question. So we'll start asking, we'll start and say, how many of you have felt so angry or upset? Hands immediately go up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, this is interesting, right? I'm like, all right, I got it. Y'all are a little upset about some stuff. Let me finish the question. And I'll say that you know, you feel angry or upset at your parents, guardians, or siblings, right? Hands go up. Again, all hands. I'm like, okay, so our children right now are dealing with some anger. And so then I'll finish the sentence and say that you thought about running away. It's now about 3/4 of the hands, okay? And when I noticed it at the first school, I'm thinking, okay, it's a Title I school. I know where it's located. I can kind of get the environment, right? Okay. And then we went to the next middle school. Different school, different area, still Title I, but different area. same exact reaction. So I had two conversations with one principal south of town, one principal north of town, in fairly decent, you know, good suburban neighborhoods,
yes.
Right? Their kids are having the same issue. I talked to a teacher in Volusia County, which is north of Orange County, right? North of Seminole County. She's seeing the same thing. So our kids are angry, Kathleen.
Yes.
And I don't know that they really understand what they're angry about or what it's for. I can make all kinds of assumptions because we have such a short amount of time with them. I actually do want to have this conversation with a group of them when I have time.
Yes.
They're really upset. And I think this is my sense, right? I have no data backing this up. I have no conversations, but I have nothing to back up what I'm about to say. So everybody's clear. This is my humble opinion. I think because there's so much division and anger and upset that they're seeing online, you can scroll and see war zones right now. That didn't exist in our lifetime, right? When we were that age.
They're upset and they don't even know what they're upset about because everyone around them is upset.
Yes. And it was really interesting because we do some work with the State Department here and we hosted some people from India in this space, right? In the anti-trafficking space. And I asked them the same question. I shared with them the story. I asked them the same question. Their kids are angry too. So it's a global phenomenon, not just a right here phenomenon, not just a, you know, the kids in the Title I neighborhoods. It's I'm asserting it's a global phenomenon. Our children are upset. They don't know why, and they don't know what to do with it.
And I want to just remind people, because I have grandchildren and I know these ages, but are we talking 6th, 7th, and 8th grade? Or is that our 7th, 8th, and 9th grade?
Yes. We're talking middle school, early high school.
Okay, so 11, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, that age range.
Yes.
And 11 is very different than 15. But
it's
across the board. But
yeah, and what's interesting is because I was just with a bunch of fifth graders yesterday. All right, I don't pick it up from them. They don't have it, and so I think it's between what's happening now out in the world and these are our pandemic kids, right? Our seventh graders were at home, Zooming, you know, during that third, fourth, fifth grade classes. They weren't getting the interaction. They weren't getting the practice of being angry at somebody and working through it. A lot of the social constructs that have our society work, they really haven't learned. And we're seeing kids being super unruly. And it's everywhere we're going. Not like horrible, but it takes something to settle them down. It really does.
No, kids.
And it's possible, but it's really interesting, Kathleen. It's really, really interesting. And it's so upsetting for me is why I called one of my school board members and we're having a conversation because it's like, look, one of my jobs of being a soldier in the street, so to speak, right? Mm-hmm. Soldier boots on the ground is to let you know what's happening.
Yes.
Because the teachers are dealing with it, but we're seeing it all day long. It's not just one class, one teacher. It's like we're seeing it all day long. And it's important for me to let them know I've got some thoughts for them to consider about how we can help our kids manage and work through this, you know, because I was listening to the news and y'all are dealing with it too. The truancy level, absentee level is from 60% to 30%, right? So it's not just us. Sounds like it's Arizona too.
It is. And we've got to,
if it's Arizona,
Jen, we got to take
if it's Arizona, India, go ahead. Yeah. Quick break.
I got to take a break. I'm so sorry. So
okay,
when we get back, when we get back, we will talk about the Online Safety Act in Congress because it's
perfect.
So important. We're talking to Jan Edwards, founder and president of Paving the Way Foundation. And this is Kathleen Wynn, and you're listening to Wynn Tucson. We will be back right after this. Stay with us on 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. Welcome back to The Voice, 1030 a.m. And you are listening to Wynn Tucson. And my very special guest today is Jan Edwards. And Jan works and we're fellow warriors, I would say, to keep kids safe. And that happens in so many different ways. But Jan, this week, the House needs to pass the Kids Online Safety Act. Can you explain to the listeners what this is and why it's so critically important that Congress passes it?
Absolutely. So I'm going to give you your listeners some additional stats. Between 2019 and 2023, there was a 14% increase of online child sexual abuse reports. Our friends at Homeland Security, oh no, it gets better. Our friends at Homeland Security let me know that there's been an 18,700% increase of online extortion of boys. Boys intentionally, for a variety of reasons, okay? And part of that has to do with our tech companies have not done enough to prevent and mitigate harms to kids online. So here's what the Kids Online Safety Act does. And I always invite people, look, you can listen to me, you can call your representative and have this conversation. I want you to go read the bill. It'll take you less than 5 minutes to read through it to really understand what this piece of legislation will do for our kids. So the first thing it does is it provides a duty of care. The company will be required to consider how their designs actually affect kids and ensure their platforms are safe, establishing a legal obligation for child protection that's super important because you and I both know about the Twitter case that our friend
Lisa Haba,
right? It's gone to three different appellate courts and been knocked down all three times because we have no rule of law at the federal level to hold these companies accountable. And to give your listeners a context, okay, regarding safety settings. So way back when, we didn't have seatbelts. We now have seatbelts. Kids are required to wear seatbelts, you know, the car seats, all of that. That was, sadly, that was required because children kept dying.
Right.
Okay, because they weren't strapped in. There are no seatbelts online to protect our kids. That's why this is so important. So the second thing it does in the space of safety settings is it's going to require the strongest safety measurements possible for young people, minors. So it's going to disable private messaging to minors from unknown adults. That's a big deal because right now, if you are not on private, anyone can message your kid, anyone. It turns off geotagging, which has been used by offenders to find minors.
Find children.
Yeah, find children. And lastly, it disables the algorithms that facilitate contact between known pedophiles and our children. I can't say enough about this piece of legislation. And then lastly, it's going to require transparency that for the data collected by the algorithms to be available for review by academics and public interest organizations. And the FTC just, and I love the fact that it came out and you called and you're like, can we talk about this? I'm like, yeah.
Yes.
So the FTC just came out with a report. And it lays out how social media and video streaming companies have been harvesting an enormous amount of Americans' personal data and monetizing it to the tune of billions of dollars a year. So they're not only making money off of our children, the environment that they've created is harming our children. There were, if anybody saw the January 31st Senate hearing, there were families there that have lost children from suicide from online extortion. There are parents there that have lost children for drug sales online. And there are children there that have actually survived the level of extortion that they experienced online because no one kept them safe. There were no guardrails. There were no seatbelts for kids online. And it's time that there were.
Well, and what they're doing, these companies are doing, is they're taking the data and the information. They're advertising to these kids besides all the... besides all the exploitation. So you've got, but this data, children are still minors. They do have, there are other protections in the law. And I would love to see somebody take that on. Like, they've had to have broken the law in other ways, maybe not in, but no company should get to exploit a child or cause them harm and then walk away scot-free. As you know, it took 12 years, but on September 11th, the owners of Backpage started serving their term for the millions and millions and millions of dollars and the exploitation and sale of children online. And so these do not happen overnight. The children are no longer children by the time it gets through the legal system. So I hope Congress, understanding the impact that this is having on our next generation, this is yet another way, the hypersexualization, the fentanyl, push for abortion, all of these things destroy the next generation. And I hope Congress is taking this seriously. If people, what is there a name of this bill?
Yeah, so it's the Kids Online Safety Act.
Kids Online Safety Act.
Kids Online Safety Act. It is H.R. 7891.
Okay.
And currently there are 58 co-sponsors, which sounds like a great number. However, there's, you know, 400
some people in Congress.
Yeah, 400, you know, hey. Come on, yeah, 38 people. So, you know, it's we're almost a little over 10%. It's so simple for parents to do. So simple is they just need to pick up, first go read the bill, right? And if you agree with it.
Tell my listeners again, H.R. what? 7891?
It's H.R. 7891.
Okay.
House Bill 7891, Kids Online Safety Act. You can find if you go onto whatever browser you use and type in U.S. Congress, a page will pop up and you click on representatives and you find your representative. You can find it by zip code or address. And their numbers are all right there. They are our public servants. They serve us, right?
What day is it and what are we talking about? Because some days they serve us and some days we get served up. It just depends.
Yeah.
On, sorry. Just
yeah.
a little
so
cynical.
Like, no, it's okay. No, it's all right. So, you know, but here's the thing, Kathleen. We've not taken our responsibility seriously as citizens. You and I have. But as a country, we have what we have because people are numb to what's happening. Right. So this is one simple thing people can do is you click, you know, go find your representative. It's all right there on your browser. Their phone numbers, their local numbers and their DC numbers are right there, too. And all you have to say is, hi, my name is fill in the blank. I live in zip code, whatever zip code it is. I'm calling and asking you
to vote
to
for
support
this.
The Kids Online Safety Bill. That's what I'm asking you to co-sponsor it and bring it to the House. Our kids deserve online safety. Again, my name so and so. I live in such and such zip code. Thank you. That's it. That's all they have to do. It takes less than 30 seconds.
And what? How will this impact social media advertisers and those that are exploiting our children? What is the effect? So this, let's say it passes, and let's say the Senate passes it through some miracle. So what do
we? The Senate's already passed it. Senate's already passed it. 91-3. Yeah, it's passed the Senate. That's why we're all focusing on the House right now. Yes, ma'am.
Well, that's
yes, ma'am.
It's interesting because it's a House bill, H.R. Okay, all right.
Well, no, there's two. No, it's Senate Bill 1409.
Okay, that's the mirror bill to it.
Cool enough.
Okay.
Yep, July 30th.
Yay.
International Day Against Human Trafficking. That passed on July 30th, passed the Senate, 91-3. And so now we're focusing on the House. And it just passed out of House Judiciary. So, right, so we've got momentum. And all of our representatives leave on Friday. So we got 2 days.
And so,
done.
Okay, good. I like it.
So you asked a question, how would it impact?
Yes.
So the other piece, there's several other bills inside this space. This really provides a duty of care. And the other thing, too, that's really going to alter is the amount of algorithms. You know, they're feeding our kids all kinds of information, some of which is useful, some of which is not. And a child should be able to look up funny cat videos and just watch funny cat videos. If they have a question about, you know, how they feel about something that they type in, you know, show me information about X, Y, and Z, right? And you get a couple of videos. That should be it. I'm all done seeing that now. Stop feeding me additional videos about the topic that I'm asking for that might actually alter my brain. And that's what's been happening to our children.
And you and I know that brains aren't fully formed on children until they're 25.
Not.
And so when you get repeated information or inappropriate information or information that children can't process, you can do damage to these children's brains. You can
Absolutely.
Indoctrinate them. You can mm-hmm. train them up to believe that something is a good thing when in fact it's a bad thing. You can normalize things that adversely yeah. affect our children. And this may sound like children's online privacy protection is no big deal, but it's a very important way to protect our children from those yeah. who mean to do our children harm.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. 100%. And it's not okay. And we're the ones that have to stand up for our children and let Congress know. Yep, I get it. We're the world's police. Not a problem. you got to start taking care of your future right here. Because if you don't start taking care of the future now, and we've already seen it, right? The anger piece is what we started.
Yes.
If we don't take care of it now, I don't know what our country's going to look like in 30 years.
So, Jan, last question, because we'll bring it back home, because people, you can do this, by the way. You can call in and talk to your congressman, talk to anybody. We're in Arizona here. Call any congressman in Arizona and tell them you want them to vote for this. Republican and Democrat, by the way. There's no reason that
absolutely
this is not a bipartisan issue. Protecting our children is not a Republican or Democrat.
It is a bipartisan issue. Yes. That's the beauty of it. These are our kids. They're our future.
Right. So what can parents do and grandparents do to keep their kids safe online? We've got about 2 minutes left.
Perfect. Really simple. Go find your location settings and turn all your location settings off on every single app that you have on your phone. There's geotags and there are ways bad actors can find your children if you don't have your location settings off. There are apps that can do latitude, longitude, and finding kids. Turn off your location settings on your camera. That's the other piece. You upload a picture. It's got your latitude, longitude. If I've got an app and I'm a bad actor, I can go do that. I'm not that, right? So, but that's what bad actors do. Really simple. Second thing, put everything on private. Everything. Now, what I'm going to say, because you and I are both public figures, right? So we get some interesting DMs. What we've been telling kids, because a lot of kids use Instagram in particular and TikTok to showcase that they're in sports, to showcase their reels. Create two different accounts. Have one be your sports reel. Have it managed by your parent. Have a separate Instagram or TikTok or Snap account that's private, only for you. And if you don't know the person, don't accept their friend request.
Jan, 30 seconds.
Those two really simple things. And lastly, if your child ever does get an inappropriate picture or DM and they don't know what to do, stop interacting, block them, report it on the app, report it to local law enforcement, and reinforce them and let them know they did nothing wrong. It's never their fault. It's never their fault.
So
we love them.
I want to thank you for being with me today. This has been Jan Edwards on Win Tucson, the founder and president of Paving the Way Foundation. And she is totally empowering Florida to disrupt child exploitation. And we'll pay attention to what happens. And I guarantee you that myself and my listeners will be calling our Congress to save our Kids Online Safety Act. So thank you for joining us today. When we come back, we'll be talking to Sheriff Mark Daniels from Cochise County. Stay with us. More great information right on the other side of this break. Welcome back to 1030 The Voice. And I am so glad to have Sheriff Mark Daniels join us from Cochise County. He's the Cochise County Sheriff. He is on the front lines when it comes to the border. I know people in Wisconsin and Illinois and Iowa think they're on the front lines, but typically they're not. So, Sheriff Daniels, welcome to Win Tucson today.
Well, thanks for having me, Kathleen, and to all your viewers. Thank you.
So you were in Tucson yesterday, and I didn't get to buy you lunch or a drink or dinner or anything.
And I know that debt's adding up, by the way.
I know, right?
A lot.
Yeah, I think I'm going to owe you and your wife like a week's vacation at this point. I probably owe you that to you anyway. You work so dang hard. But the feds were here yesterday, and did they come and tell you everything that they're going to do to fix all the problems that they've allowed for the last 3.5 years? Can you share what yesterday's meeting was about?
It was, and I'll tell you, it was a little bit frustrating in the fact that us at the local level, I mean, there were police chiefs there, there were sheriffs there, and this is a meeting about the fentanyl as the primary focus. And what was frustrating, Kathleen, was the fact that they put an interdiction task force together to, you know, address fentanyl. Well, let's look, and I said this yesterday in the meeting. In 2020, there was 2 million fentanyl pills seized in Arizona, and that represents probably 10% what's coming across. The rest is getting away, we know. Last year was 111 million fentanyl pills. So you got to keep that in perspective, where we've been and where we're at today. Well, one of the things that they're really doing is putting this interdiction team together. It was made up of all federal law enforcement. It's not made up of any sheriffs or police chiefs, and I questioned that, and I was told that we would be able to come and speak to the group. My point to me sharing this with you is, until you start incorporating that recipe of success, which is your police chief, sheriffs, mayors, and all their community leaders, you will always be absent at the community level. And that's what's happening, and that's that lack of engagement and prioritization and acknowledgement. Then we talked about this administration's approach toward harm reduction when it comes to fentanyl use among Americans. Well, one component I challenged back was, what about the enforcement? We can talk about reduction, which I'm a big believer. If somebody comes to my office right now and says, hey, I got an addiction, help me. We will get you, do everything we can within my authority and resources to get you to some addiction center, make calls, help you as much as we can through our own care team. I'll buy you a Polar Pop, whatever it takes. But one of the things that the federal government's really big on right now is giving out syringes to addicts. And I know it was under a health standard, but I'll tell you my position on that. I refuse to do that because if you're an addict, you want help, I'm open arms to you. If you need a clean syringe, I'm not going to enable your addiction. I'm here to help your addiction, but not to enable it. And if you overdose on a government syringe, what do I tell the family? Oh, can we get that back? No, I think we have a better approach. So it was frustrating because we need to prioritize the enforcement. We need to prioritize, and not that those others are not very important, but they are. But we also need to fund the problem, and we're not doing that. Well, and for your viewers, Kathleen, I don't know if you know HIDA, which is High Intensity Drug Area.
Yeah.
DEA, and also Stone Garden, which is our program that we work side by side with Border Patrol to interdict crime on the border, have all been reduction, even though slight, a reduction in cost for those programs, which are all local partnership programs by Congress. So it's very, very frustrating for us at the local level.
Well, and I'm going to add on, I'm going to pile on, because Health and Human Services is funding to the tune of billions of dollars all this stuff for illegal immigrants. They're taking care of their health over the health of Americans. And so they're prioritizing, our own agencies are prioritizing those that are coming here illegally over our own citizens. And
well, they are.
And so we reduce our own safety through DEA, HIDA, Stone Garden, all those in the Border Patrol and the sheriff's offices to enable us to incentivize and encourage and allow the illegal immigration that's going on. So,
well, you're 100% correct on that. Just to give you a number here that I think your viewers would like to hear is, when you have 107,000 citizens die, this was just given to us here in California at a meeting I was just at with federal agencies and sheriffs. 107,000 citizens died of fentanyl opiate crisis or poisoning, however you look at it. It's about 300 a day. And then you look at the, you switch that up, $150 billion to deal with the immigration surge at our border. What about the epidemic of poisoning to our youth, to our communities, to our families? That has to be addressed through enforcement, too. There's got to be consequences, and right now we're lacking that.
Well, and so we have the fentanyl crisis, and if we only solved that, we would be doing great. But I shared with you earlier today before we came on that one of my friends is a whistleblower out of the Inspector General's office, the U.S. Inspector General's office. And she was originally the one that told us about the 87,000 missing children, which has now grown to over 330,000 missing illegal immigrant children. How are we as a country allowing this? That's a humanitarian crisis. If you couple that with the fentanyl, how did they come to you and now tell you with a straight face yesterday, now they're going to fix everything? I don't know how you stomach that.
Well, it's whether it's a fentanyl issue, whether it's modern-day slavery or exploitation of human beings, and that's what's going on with these children that are missing. It was 85,000, what, a year and a half ago. There's reports up to 300,000, what you're telling me. The bottom line, at the end of the day, all I can say is it's not working. But we keep putting our heads in the sand while we exploit our country. We make our country vulnerable. Every day somebody comes in. I saw a Homeland Security excerpt from a recent hearing where the TSA director was talking about people going to airports around the country. They have warrants for their arrest from CBP, Customs and Border Patrol. I use Customs, old school. And they're allowed to fly. They're allowed to fly with warrants, which means either there's a warrant for you because you haven't attended a hearing or you're up for deportation, whatever it may be. But they're allowing them to fly. As a U.S. citizen, you go to the airport and you have a warrant. What happens is you go to jail. What are we doing in this country? Yeah, they arrest you. And that's why local law enforcement work within our regional and community airports. But it just amazes me how we're setting the rule of law aside. And that's where I'm big at. We have to enforce it consistently to all human beings.
Well, and speaking of which, there are 15 sheriffs in this state, right? 15 counties, 15 county sheriffs.
Right.
Do you have at least cooperation? Because we are the front door, if you will, to this crime. Or Texas may claim that they are, but I think the fentanyl, I think, has been traced to Arizona at a higher level. Do you have the cooperation of all 14 other sheriffs besides yourself?
Sadly, we don't. Let me give you a little narrative on that. Since this has happened over the last 3.5 years, these non-political stats that you hear about, the surges, the gotaways, whatever you want to talk about, especially in Arizona, we deal with so much gotaways on the east side of our state, the Tucson sector, where sheriffs around the country from Texas, Minnesota, you name it, from major county sheriffs, western state sheriffs, southwest border, Texas sheriffs, and also national sheriffs, have formed an alliance to address border, to address community safety. And I can say Arizona sheriffs are a partner with that, along with myself. There's two sheriffs in the county in the state that I've never seen them at a meeting to address this with us, to find reasonable solutions, not political solutions, but reasonable solutions. And that's sad to me.
Well, and I'm going to go rogue here and guess that it's Pima County and guess that it's probably Santa Cruz County.
That is correct.
Sheriff Daniels, do I get a prize for you?
Yeah. You know, and the prize will come if they join us and actually
send
their input. They can disagree with us. It's not a political thing. You took an oath of office the same as I did, these sheriffs all over the country. We call out D.C. We call out Congress when they don't do the right thing. America's sheriffs do. But we got to call our own out, too, when they don't get out there and support the cause, and that is quality of life, your freedoms, your liberties, and the justice that we all took an oath to protect.
And yesterday when you were there, you had chiefs of police also in the room, correct?
We did, yes.
And are they somehow singing from a different song sheet than you, or did you at least have alliances with, I think Tucson PD was there. I mean, do you have alliances at least with your chiefs who understand the impact and the significance of what is happening because we don't have operational control of our border?
No, we don't. And the numbers show that. There's no doubt about it. We've never had 100% border security, but we've had the will to get to that 100%. And we've also had management. I always call it manageable control is different than perfection. And we'll never see perfection.
Right.
But our police chiefs in Arizona have been a fabulous partner with sheriffs here. ACOP, they call them. We work very close with them. And Tucson Police Chief was there yesterday, the Kingman Police Chief, the Marana Police Chief, and the local sheriffs that spoke yesterday, Sheriff Klaus out of Navajo County, myself, Sheriff Skinner, the Maricopa County Sheriff. I mean, all of us that stand united with our police chiefs. And that's the only way you're going to solve this, not through a political lens, but through a community lens of a reality.
And I have to go to the political side, not for. And you're running again. Are you running unopposed?
For the most part, yes.
Okay, we'll go with that. Is this your second or third term, Sheriff Daniels?
Going in my fourth.
Oh my goodness, I missed one. Okay, so I don't know anyone that would want the job that you have. To be fair, I know that 3 years ago it was difficult, but the last 3 years have had to have been the most difficult that you could have because you don't have the cooperation of your federal government, and you've been asked to take on so much. And I know 2 years ago you didn't have the resources that you needed. What do you say to these politicians who now are running these ads, and you may not say anything to them, that are now they're going to secure the border, and they're incumbents, they're currently in. I mean, what do you say to them, or someone who's in Congress who's running for Senate, who now has a plan? It seems kind of disingenuous to me.
Well, it does, and when you're running for office, especially if you're an incumbent, I don't care if you're state, local, or federal, we should have been engaged. We should have been out there doing things together. And I say this to all our congressional people, state, federal. I say it to our mayors. And that's what's made us successful down here is we've worked so close together. We might not always agree at the end of the day, whether it be a police chief, sheriff, whether it be a mayor and a sheriff, whatever it may be. But at the end of the day, we're walking united for our communities. I really wish Congress, and I've said this before, I'm talking about the D.C. side of this, is when you they go into session and do their Pledge of Allegiance, read your oath of office right behind that. And that is to follow the rule of law, not the political ideology. It's the rule of law. That's what sets who we are. If you don't like it, change it. Government elected officials get in trouble because they do their own ideologies over the rule of law. And guess what? This country is suffering right now because of that.
Mark, we have to take a short break. It's like a minute. Can you stay with me? Because there's a couple more things I would like to cover that I think are important that our listeners know. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay, great.
Sure.
We are talking to Sheriff Mark Daniels from Cochise County. He is on the front lines, and he's fighting the good fight for us. We need more people just like him. You are listening to Win Tucson. I'm Kathleen Wynn on 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. We'll be back. Stay with us. Welcome back to Win Tucson and Sheriff Mark Daniels from Cochise County, who is running for his fourth term, and Arizona needs you. And you're on a lot of other panels and boards around. You're not just Sheriff Cochise County. You're very involved across this region, across the country. You've had many leadership roles. Am I wrong to say that?
You're not. And I'm a big believer if you can talk about it all day, otherwise you just, and talking's cheap. You got to engage it. So I'm chairman of the Southwest Border Sheriffs. I'm vice president, I'll be president of the Western State Sheriffs, which is west sheriffs west of Mississippi, chair of the National Sheriff Border Security for all the coastal and northern and southern borders. And then on the Arizona side, I just got chairman for the Alliance to Combat Transnational Threats, and that's a partnership local and federal working together to keep our community safe. And Southern Iraq, I sit on the committee there for Homeland Security for Arizona. So again, I try to engage as much as I can. And again, we might not always agree, but at least I'm going to be at the table to discuss it, disagree with you, or say, yeah, let's go down that road and meet in the middle. I'm all about that. And I call elected officials out. I call community leaders out when they won't engage.
There's a thing called gotaways, right? And we know right. that you guys are doing a great job, but you can't do everything. And even at the peak when it was good, not bad, there were still people that were getting away. We are seeing crime, at least in Pima County where I live. Every day I get a new thing that something happened 4 miles from my house or 3 miles or 2 miles or 8 miles. But it seems like I'm getting more and more of those. With us not having operational control, are the criminal enterprises that are operating in our state, are they getting bigger? Are they getting richer? Are they profiting off of our dysfunction from the federal government and from things not working inside our state?
Well, that's an obvious yes, and I don't mean critical when I say that to you, but
no.
It truly is. When you can see the amount of increase just in fentanyl, you see the amount of people dying every day in our country. And this was stated to me by a federal leader in California several weeks ago. And a federal leader made this comment to the sheriffs and his own counterparts in the room that if 300 dolphins came up on shore every day and died, and then the federal government would have every scientist, every resource to figure out why and stop that epidemic. But we're lounging on human beings every day. It just amazes me. The less we talk about it, and that's the Washington, D.C., is let's avoid it by not talking about it, let's not engage it, let's not prioritize it. Dear God, let's not acknowledge it. That this country hasn't even seen what the impact's going to be. Sadly to say, Kathleen, we've let 9/11 become a memory instead of a reminder.
Yeah, and there are terrorist cells in our country. I know that. I've been briefed. I'm completely aware that because we don't know who's in the country right now, we are not as safe as we could be. Mark, another thing that this another outcome that happens is, and we've talked about funding. I just received a notice the other day that Arizona is spending over $1 billion annually on homelessness-related services, and the homeless population has surged 40% in the last 5 years. So 53% of individuals, or currently 53% of individuals experience homelessness in Arizona. have no place to, are unsheltered. They're just out on the streets. We see zombie people. I call them zombie people. It's part of the fentanyl problem, but it's not only that. So $1 billion, Arizona. What do we do? I mean, is that another outcome of the border?
Well, I will say this is. This all goes back to priorities. When I took over as sheriff 12 years ago, the first thing I did was took a budget that gave me and said, okay, it's my budget, but I had to prioritize what's most important. Mm-hmm. The first thing we did was the quality of life built around the personnel that work here that could serve the people. So we had to take a limited amount of budget, but we prioritized it for the people we serve. Our federal government needs to go back and do the same thing. What is most important to the people of Arizona? What's most important to the people of this country? And that is their quality of life. And when you think about veterans sleeping in a park or have mental health or PTSD, or you think of children going to bed hungry, but we're spending $150 billion on those coming across the country. And I'm not against humanitarian. I'm a big believer in people and humans. But let's take care of our own first, because we're watching a country right now that's divided. We're watching a country that's on a slippery slope. But it seems like we're going backwards instead of uniting a country for what we stand for. And our forefathers, I wish they could be here today and say, what do you think? I think that would tell it all.
Well, I think they'd say shut down every letter agency that you have. I think they would say get rid of them all. There's so much waste in government. And they'd, you know, someone said there's now four branches of government and the fourth branch being administrative, that we have become an administrative juggernaut in this country, and we're spending billions of dollars, and the founding fathers never intended for government to run our country. They wanted government to be small, and the more layers that we add to government, the more dysfunctional we seem to become.
Yeah.
And then I think it's insulting. So yesterday when the feds are here and it's like Rome is burning, and they don't even bring in a bucket of water. They bring in gasoline and tell you they're going to have this task force. To me, that's insulting. It's like, are you kidding me right now? I'm offended for you. I don't know if you were offended, but I'm offended for you.
Well, thank you. And I am a believer. I said this earlier today. When federal government becomes boring, which means that's the best federal government we have, right? They're unpredictable. And that's where the trust and transparency is gone right now with the federal government. And what scares me the most, Kathleen, is the fact that one thing I tell people all the time is know your elected officials at the community level. Can they bring you back? Can they bring quality of life? If they're going to bring hate, division, discontent, think about that. We have to get our communities back together now because we're being affected by the federal government. And again, there's a purpose for the federal government, but right now they need a gut check hard.
And do we get to deport, Mark? I mean, I think, does it matter who you vote for? Because I think one side wants to deport, the other side wants to continue this. So in order to fix this, do we have mass deportation of those that have broken the law, that have taken advantage, that are participating in criminal enterprises? Is that part of the solution?
The solution lies within the rule of law. And it's not an opinion, it's not a sensation, it's not, oh my, we can't do that. It's none of that. It's in the rule of law. If we follow the rule of law, we wouldn't have a border crisis right now. We truly wouldn't.
Yes.
Everybody says, well, we need to change the immigration. Immigration is very clear. 4 years ago, we didn't have this, and the same rule of law applied. We have to follow the rule of law. If you're here, you shouldn't be here. The rule of law should apply. Not whether, well, I know this person. Well, they have a child. I get all that, and I respect that, but the rule of law should, that's what this land and our country was founded on, and that's what we should follow. When we get away from that, then we get in trouble. That's why we're in trouble.
Mark, do you have all the positions at Cochise County that you need? Are you short officers? Are you short, they're not officers. Are you short deputies? Are you short personnel and staff right now?
We do really well. I think we have two deputy positions open, and we have two detention officer positions, which is way, way better than most.
Phoenix should be jealous of you right now, just for that statement alone.
But part of it is, we promote a culture of rule of law, a culture of We support those that wear a badge, our team members that work in the jail, our team members that work the road, and our support staff that makes it happen, to include all our volunteers, which is 100 strong. We support them because those are our neighbors. I work for them in so many ways. And so we have a very strong culture. I do a survey every 3 years, which helps determine if I'm going to run for sheriff again. And we have over a 99% approval rating within the sheriff's office. So that tells me we are doing something right, which has helped our retention and helped our recruitment.
And day one, you go in January after you've been reelected. I'm predicting the future now. I do that on Tuesdays.
Right.
what becomes your top priority in Cochise County, in Sierra Vista? And obviously Cochise County is bigger than Sierra Vista, but what are the top three things that you will focus on come January 2025?
And that's the same thing that's happened for the last 12 years. It's two prong. It's actually a three prong. First prong is the men and women that work here. Are we taking care of them? That'll always be my priority, because if I have a team that doesn't want to be here, it's not passionate, don't feel that they wear the badge, they wear the authority for the right reasons, we're in trouble. Those are the ones that go out and deconflict every day. Second of all, it's the people we serve. That's a shared prong right there. The people we serve, their quality of life, their freedoms and liberties, and the justices that we provide. And last not least is, I can't do it alone. If I'm, I can be elected sheriff, and if I have no influences to partner with state, local, and federal, partner with non-law enforcement agencies to work together, to partner with our state legislative folks that have made what we do in Cochise County is amazing, but I have to credit them because they're the ones that funded my efforts down here, not the federal government, but my state. So we got to have those influential partners. If not, I'm stuck in the mud. So we'll continue to do what we're doing for the last 12 years, and until the people say, sheriff, we want legalized meth, we want legalized fentanyl. Well, time to get a new sheriff then, because I can't support that.
And it's against the law, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
Final thing, out of your meeting yesterday with everyone that was there, do you feel confident that what the federal government is proposing will change anything on our border, make us safer, make Arizona a better place to live? Did you hear anything yesterday that you felt that this task force that's now being formed, suspiciously 5 weeks before an election, just saying, did you hear anything that mattered and that you took away?
No, a couple of reasons why. Number one, the funding mechanism is not there. If you're going to go after an epidemic, just like you did COVID, we threw how much money toward COVID? Now we have an epidemic with fentanyl throughout this country. We're not putting money toward the enforcement side of it. There's socially accepted programs they want to push, but that doesn't do law enforcement any good. We need to have the incarceration money. We need the defense money. We need the prosecution money, all the money that comes within the criminal justice system. Last not least, what scares me the most, and I've said this earlier in your show here, is until Congress realizes that we're sharing the same communities, we still have a problem. You have to listen to a partner. Tell us what we want to hear to make you a feel-good moment is not the answer. I need action.
Well, Sheriff Daniels, thank you so much. And we are hoping here in Pima County that we get you a new partner to partner up with come our election, someone who actually wants to get together with the other sheriffs. I think we've gone far too long. As a neighboring county of Cochise County, we'd like to bring you the support that you need. So I just always appreciate you. And you let me know what I owe you and your wife for, dinner, vacations, whatever it is. You're welcome back anytime, sir. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Have a great day.
Thank you, viewers.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Bye. You've been listening to Win Tucson, and this is Kathleen Wynn on 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. And tomorrow, we're going to be back with Energy Corporation Commission. Not as exciting as the border, but it could be. So stay tuned tomorrow as we talk to Rachel Walden and Renee Lopez, who are running to keep our lights on.